Hey everybody, what's up? It's your host Ryan Sketch here at Sketchbook Audio. Hey, some interesting news came on the telly recently, and I want to talk to you guys all about it. It has everything to do with EVs, and I think you guys will be really intrigued about what's happening in not only a political spectrum, but also in the automotive industry. So stay tuned for that. It's coming up. And I'm also going to do a brief review of an interesting vehicle, which I mentioned in the previous episode briefly, but the Kia Carnival. If you have no idea what that is, you need to stay tuned because we're going to talk about it right here on Sketchbook Audio. Stay tuned. All right, we are back here at Sketchbook Audio. I'm your host, as always, Ryan Sketch. This was a very interesting news piece that I didn't expect to happen so soon. I knew it was going to come eventually, probably more so if a certain somebody became president again, which, God willing, that won't happen. I know I probably just lost maybe 2% of my audience by making that comment, but, you know, whatever. I'm trying not to make it too red, blue. Listen, it's just, it is what it is. We have two elderly men running for president, and neither look all that great. But one is trying to maintain a status quo, and the other one is trying to rewrite everything and go back to the way it was. That could be good for some people. That could be bad for others. Hopefully, there's a happy middle ground. And I think that's what's happening here right now. What am I talking about specifically? Well, if you didn't know, the past 4 years or so, the automotive industry was, we'll call it, edged and pushed into, gently nudged into switching from gas-powered vehicles, or ICE, as we call them. And if you didn't know what that stands for, internal combustion engines, moving towards EVs. And there was a strong push, particularly by General Motors, and then a lot of other companies sort of followed suit in their own way. And that turned out to be rather disastrous. A lot of people just push back on EVs. They hate them. They hate the fact that, first of all, they're being forced to buy an EV, which is, let me squash that right now. You're not being forced to buy an EV. There's plenty of cars out there that are still ICE or hybrid. And frankly, as I've said before, hybrid is the way to go, whether it's a plug-in hybrid or a regular hybrid, that's the way to go right now. But I digress. There's a lot of people who just think that EVs are more pollutant than a internal combustion engine vehicle. And depending on what factors you're looking into, what your scales are, that could be true, but sort of in the short term. So there's the mining process for the rare earth minerals and the metals that go into EV batteries. And then there's also the manufacturing of those components, whether it's the batteries, the motors themselves, or the vehicles overall. There are carbon footprint implications in all manufacturing. But I think a lot of companies, especially right now, have made the push to become greener, even in their production of internal combustion engine vehicles. And that's a good thing. We should all be seeing that as a very good thing. A lot of companies have had to change their ways about how they do things, and they've become greener in one way, shape, or form, whether it's just switching to EVs or it's the way that they manufacture whatever vehicle or product it is that they manufacture. So anyways, you have all these companies that are slowly or quickly making the switch to EVs, and they're dumping their ICE components. And that's really bothered a lot of people because there's a large group of people, particularly the Brotherhood of Mopar, who love having the ability to burn as much oil and as much gas as possible without any regard for the environment or their neighbor. And it, you know what? That's fine. Sort of. I've come to sort of hate the culture around a lot of those vehicles because they're abused left and right. But let's be honest, they are probably the biggest polluters out there next to heavy machinery and semi-trucks. But even semi-trucks have managed to switch from gas to alternative fuels, whether it's oh God, natural gas or hydrogen, or even in the case of Tesla, they're switching to full electric. But there are still people who want internal combustion engines, so they're pushing back on the government to say, no, we don't want these, and they're just not buying them. They're not buying them to the point where dealerships are actually slammed with whether it's Ford Mustang Mach-Es, Ford F-150 Lightnings, Kia EVs and hybrids. Toyota doesn't really have that problem. They really only have the Prius and the RAV4 Prime. And the Solterra, or well, the bZ4X, which isn't selling so well in of itself, but that's really all they have from an electric standpoint. General Motors, all of their vehicles have switched to, well, I shouldn't say all of them. Most of their SUVs are still gas powered or slightly reduced engine size, or they're hybrid in some way. But the rest of everything else just kind of went towards electrification. And Chrysler, they have abandoned the Hemi. Now, let me also clarify that they haven't abandoned ICE vehicles entirely. Chrysler or Stellantis has a lot of electric vehicles that are being made for Europe, and a few that are being made for the U.S. And the few that are being made for the U.S., which I'll name in a second here, are based on platforms that are extremely versatile. So versatile, in fact, that they are set up for full EV, plug-in hybrid, hybrid, straight up internal combustion engine, and alternate fuels. So if we come up with some sort of synthetic fuel that can be mass produced and used around the world, then that's an option. Or hydrogen. If hydrogen becomes more mainstream, then that's an option as well. So don't get your panties all up in a bunch. Dodge, in general, has not completely abandoned EVs or ICE internal combustion engine vehicles. So the next generation Charger, the Grand Wagoneer S or the Wagoneer S, and a few other vehicles are still, including the Ram REV, the range extended vehicle, they are still in some ways, shape, or form going to have and offer an internal combustion engine, however that may take place. For the Charger specifically, you're going to get a inline twin turbo six cylinder. I always want to say V6, but it's an inline six twin turbo at different power outputs. And then in the highest trim levels, you're going to get the EV, which has probably over 1,000 horsepower at some stage. That's insane. Tesla beware, because frankly, I would rather see a Charger, Daytona, Banshee, whatever they're going to call it, screaming down the road than a Tesla Model S Plaid or a Model 3. I just think it looks cooler, and that's just me. But that's what's happening. There's stockpiles of EVs at dealerships right now because people just aren't buying them. What does that mean for the general consumer? Everything. That means that you are going to be able to go and get an EV at a huge discount right now. So if you were really considering an EV, whether it's a Tesla, a Polestar, a General Motors, like the Hummer or the Bolt or the new Equinox EV or the Blazer EV, if it's available at a dealership, it's probably sitting there on the lot and has been for a few weeks, and it's going to have big incentives. So now would be the time to get one of those. There's nothing wrong with them. Sure, there's some minor issues with some controls or some electronics that can typically be fixed over the air or with software, but generally speaking, the EVs are fine, especially Polestar. I think Polestar is tried and true. I have not heard of any major problem with a Polestar. Jeep did have a bit of a recall recently on their 4xe models, but again, it's a software issue. It's an over-the-air fix. And that's going to be taken care of quite quickly. But if you want to get an EV and you're dead set on pure electric, I would go and check it out now. That would probably also apply to the plug-in hybrids, because the Hornet RT and the Tonale are not selling that well. And that's a shame. I think it's the perfect size vehicle for the average person It's got gobs of power. It can get you from point A to point B very quickly and efficiently. You can run on 30 plus miles per gallon or 30 plus miles pure electric, charge it up in a matter of a couple hours, I think. I don't know what the fast charging or the standard charging is for that vehicle, but so don't quote me. But I'd imagine you'd be able to park the car while you're at work or while you're at the hospital or even shopping, and you could get your 30 miles range plus back pretty quickly. And then, there's some other vehicles out there. Like I just checked out the EV6s at a couple Kia dealerships. There's 10, 15 of them. And even the used ones, they're not being priced as high. So those are going very, the used ones are going probably a bit quicker than the new ones. But there are incentives, especially on the ones that aren't made in the US and don't fall under Biden's current rule where, it has to be made in the US in order to get the bulk of the tax incentive, which is where the Hornet and the Tonale kind of suffered. But Dodge and Alfa Romeo kind of made it up to the customers by just knocking off $7,500 instead of worrying about a tax rebate or tax credit. I kind of skipped over what I initially wanted to mention, and that was that the government has decided to roll back its push and demand for pure EV. It sounds like Biden's administration is ready to kind of throttle back or throttle down on how much of a mandate they are putting on these automakers to do this stuff. And, it's not necessarily that they're forcing them to go pure EV. They have really high CAFE standards, and they really want to see emissions come down, and they really want to see fuel economy go up. And while electric cars may pose a problem in some senses, they don't ever have emissions. Once they're a vehicle, they no longer have emissions. And recycling of an EV isn't as hard as you think it is. There's companies like Redwood that are doing fantastic things with the recycling of the batteries. Even Nissan is doing amazing things with recycling batteries and using them no longer as a car battery, but as a battery for something else. In generators, for one thing, in solar panel charging stations at like a cafe where people come and sit and they can plug in their phone or whatever. There's a solar panel that recharges the battery, and that battery was pulled out of a car. And there's little stations like that. And actually, some of them are kind of cool. They're actually built to look like a flower. And I think that's really cool how they do that. But, so the Biden administration is kind of rolling back some of its guidelines and how it wants to handle things. I don't know if it's official yet, but I think that's kind of the route they're going to go. Maybe it's so that they can get some of these EVs off the lot. Maybe it's so that they can allow automakers to not spend billions and then lose billions, whatever it is. I would hope that companies are looking more into hybrids and plug-in hybrids. Maybe rather than just jumping straight into EVs. And that, I mean, because that's an easy fix. You can take any vehicle on the road right now and turn it into a hybrid. It's not all that difficult. To turn it into a pure EV is a little bit more difficult. But look at cars like the Kia Niro, where it's offered in every version. It's offered in a gas, it's offered in a hybrid, it's offered in a plug-in hybrid, and it's offered in a pure electric form. There are cars out there that give you that kind of flexibility. And I think Stellantis in general is really focused on that, so that just in case situations like this happen, where they, whatever regime is ruling over us right now in the U.S., they can, if they roll back the standards or if they make them more stringent again, they can accommodate that and they can adapt to it. So check out your local dealership if you are interested in an EV right now. The Mach-E, there's and the Ford F-150 Lightning, there are plenty of them sitting on dealerships. Kia EV6 has quite a few out there. Polestar, a phenomenal car. I will praise their name again and again and again. Fantastic vehicle. It's fun to drive. It still looks and feels like a car inside and out. It's fast, faster than it needs to be, really. And it has all the modern tech you would expect an EV and a Volvo slash Polestar to have. So, plus extremely safe. The next thing I wanted to talk about, we're gonna put politics and that aside. The next thing I wanted to talk about, which I mentioned in the intro, was the Kia Carnival. So stay tuned. I'm gonna take a quick break here. We're at about 15 minutes. Take a quick break. You guys can grab a drink. I'm gonna grab a beverage and some yogurt-covered raisins, and we'll be right back here at Sketchbook Audio. Okay, we're back here at Sketchbook Audio. I'm your host, Ryan Sketch, if you didn't already know that. Thanks for tuning in. So the next thing I want to talk about is the Kia Carnival. If you do have no idea what that is, that's okay. It's only been around in the US for, I think, almost 2 years. What it was the Kia Sedona. And the Kia Sedona was a functional, affordable, charming minivan. Was it the best minivan on the market? Not at all. Was it affordable? Yes, especially compared to the Honda Odyssey, the Toyota Sienna, and the Chrysler Twins, the Grand Caravan, and the Town and Country, which was then consolidated into one, the Pacifica, which got very pricey very quickly. But now Kia kind of went through a whole new rebranding, reimaging of themselves, and that started with the Kia logo changing. And then the which some people have said looks like it says KN, so I wonder if KNN has ever gotten mad about it. But come on, it's Kia. It looks way better than what Kia used to look like. It's not surrounded in a bubble anymore. It just says Kia, and I think it just reads better on graphics. So that's my opinion on it. But it also included renaming the Kia Optima to the K5, which is what it's labeled at in its home market. Surprisingly, no other vehicle in the Kia lineup here in the US changed its name with the exception of the Optima and the Sedona, which became the K5 and the Carnival, respectively. So the Kia Carnival is completely new. When it came out, it looked nothing like the outgoing model, the Sedona. It actually kind of resembled an SUV. It had a very big, broad face, which kind of looked a little bit like GMC in their front end and their design language, but overall, the rest of the vehicle had proportions and muscularity that you would typically find on an SUV, and that made it very appealing to men because no longer was it this sleek, some people would call affectionately the other minivans to be very jelly bean-esque. And the Pacifica is very sinewy, sinewy, I think is the word I'm looking for. Very sleek, modern, and maybe some might call it a little bit more feminine, effeminate. And, so they added the S model line so that it had like a blackout or it had red accents and it was a little bit more, a young dad could get in and not feel too embarrassed that they had a minivan. And then it also appealed to women who were just like, I don't really want a minivan, but now it feels a little bit less like a minivan. And, the Carnival does that in spades. It doesn't really look like a minivan unless you check out the door handles, where you see that clearly the door handles are set up the way a minivan typically is. And you see that track in the rear C to D pillar. Where the sliding door goes, you would kind of mistake it for an SUV. And it actually reminds me a lot of what General Motors did back in the early 2000s, which they had a series of vehicles, and I cannot remember all of their names, but I think one of them was the Chevy Uplander. There was a Pontiac version, and there was a maybe a Buick version, and then there was a GMC version. And they were all the same vehicle. Badge engineering at its finest, but it was the minivan for SUV people, and I think it had sliding doors. I don't recall, but it looked more like an SUV and less like a minivan. And it was their way of saying, "Well, we've abandoned the traditional minivan because GM and Ford just couldn't compete with the other three big names, the Chrysler Twins." The Sienna, the Toyota Sienna, and the Honda Odyssey, they just could not compete. Their market share was plummeting, and Ford hasn't even gotten back into it. They're phenomenal with their work trucks, but and cargo vans, but just could not do the family hauler. So Kia was still in the mix, and now that they have it as the Carnival, It looks really good, and we just recently got to see what the latest update to the Carnival looks like. And if you didn't like the Carnival before, which would be interesting because it's very charming. It's got ambient lighting on the inside. It's got nice two-tone color options. The middle seats recline, and they have, well, I mean, all middle seats if they're captain chairs recline. But what I meant was they have like a leg bolster thing that kicks up, so you can almost have a bed in the back. It feels more like a limousine. There's a lot of space in the Kia Carnival, and I think they also added. I think there's now two rows of stow and go like the Pacifica has. Don't quote me on that. They've all, pretty much all the minivans have had the rear bench seat will stow and go. I don't know what the other names are for them. That's kind of a trademark for Chrysler there, but the rear seat folds into the floor. That they fold backwards into that cavity in the trunk space. Now I think the Kia's middle row does it as well. May not be in the exact same way that the Pacifica does it, but it's I think it's similar. I also saw that, and this might just be for the Korean market. This might only maybe there's a longer wheelbase, but I also saw that the captain's chairs rotate to face the rear passengers. And that's something actually that Chrysler did in the Town and Country and the Grand Caravan in the previous generation. And it sold pretty well. It was just kind of a mechanical pain in the butt. It was something you would have seen in a conversion van, no problem. But, two captain's chairs that rotate and then they face the rear, that gives your kids a lot of ability to talk amongst themselves, have fun amongst themselves, and not bother the parents. And they even included a table that you can put in there, but there wasn't a lot of space. If they had made a long wheelbase of the Grand Caravan and the Town and Country, it probably would have worked out better. But I think that's where the Carnival could really excel because I do believe it is longer than a Pacifica. And furthermore, it's very square and boxy, so there's probably a little bit more cargo room and interior volume than in the other minivans. The Honda Odyssey, though, and the Sienna are freakishly large as well. But they have their own qualities about them that make them a little bit different than, say, the Pacifica. So, the Kia Carnival got a new face. It got new LED headlights and taillights. And like I said, it got a slightly updated interior as well. And the one thing I love about Kia's lighting is that they have managed to turn lighting into something that's very shapely, and cyberpunk is probably the first word that comes to mind, but very digital, and the graphic for their lighting is just insane. It's not just a tube anymore. You would almost think that they have BMW's lighting with like the laser lighting, but they do not. They just have really nice plastic elements inside their headlights that light fills perfectly. It's really nice how they do it, and I'm actually curious as to how they go about doing it. But one thing I will tell you is Hyundai owns their own lighting company, so through Mobis, and all their headlights and everything are made, they're designed in-house and they're made in-house, so that probably helps them. Whereas a lot of other automakers, they might design their headlights in-house, but the building of them gets done by another company. So anyways, you have the Kia Carnival. It's a fantastic minivan-esque SUV, and that is all new, or well, heavily refreshed for the 2024 model year. The next thing I want to talk about briefly, so I don't take up too much time here, is the Mini Cooper. I've been reading a lot, and this is just super random. I was just reading about the Mini Cooper, John Cooper's work, the JCW, and there's a lot of people that have been giving it a lot of slack because it got so big. And that's fine though. If you understand what Mini Cooper's ethos is, then you would understand that it's not entirely about being super tiny. It's about having a lot of emotion, a lot of fun, and a lot of personalization in a smaller package than what the rest of everybody else offers. So, for all intents and purposes, the Mini lineup is still very small compared to anybody else's, and its parent company BMW, the smallest thing which the new Countryman sits on the same platform as the X1 and the X2, it is still smaller than those two, and certainly more affordable than those two as well. JCW aside. And also the new Countryman offers a full EV version that the X2 and I believe X1 will not offer in the States yet. They do offer the X2 and the new X2 as an EV in Europe, but I don't believe they offer or they will offer it here in the States. I think we're just getting the ICE version, which is fine because it's fast and it's cool and it actually is pretty decent on gas, but so, anyways, back to Mini not being so Mini anymore. Listen, the Countryman was never really meant to be all that Mini. It was meant to be smaller than the smallest BMW, and it still is. And it was meant to be a classy, compact, subcompact crossover, I guess, while it still allowed the Clubman, the Mini Cooper four-door, the two-door, the convertible, the hardtop versions, all of those to maintain a small size. And those all will. They will all still be very small. Some people might not like the overall styling. I think they've gotten a little bit more edgy, but also minimalist with a lot of what's going on. But I think that's really for an aerodynamic sake. And then just to clean up a lot of body lines, but maintain the overall history and graphical language that a Mini Cooper has offered over the generations. But I think if you're worried that Mini Cooper is going in the wrong direction solely based on the Countryman, then you're kind of missing the point. The Countryman was really to appeal to Americans and being bigger and to get those people into a Mini versus a BMW versus an Audi or a Mercedes or just any other compact crossover. I mean, frankly, I would rather get into the Mini Cooper Countryman than even the Tonale or the Dodge Hornet. And that's just because I love what Mini does with their vehicles as opposed to what those other two vehicles do. And what that is customization and uniqueness. There are so many different options and packages, and it just makes it a more upscale feel and experience than when you would if you ordered the Tonale or the Dodge. And you know, there's some other vehicles as well, the Compass or the Chevy Trax or what would you Ford got rid of the EcoSport, and that's hardly a comparative vehicle. We don't have the Puma here in the States, but for those who do have the Puma, that's a similar option to the to the Countryman. And to those who have the Fiesta, that would be comparable, I guess, to the Mini Cooper, three-door and five-door variants. But there's not a lot of small cars anymore, especially here in the United States. We don't even have the Fiat 500 anymore, or the 500X for that matter. All we're going to have is the 500E, and you know, that's a fantastic alternative to just a base three-door Mini Cooper, or even the Mini Cooper SE, which is the S electric variant. You know, I think the Mini Countryman is a fantastic looking vehicle. It's using recycled materials, it's using repurposed textiles, it's using faux leather, and it still maintains a very upscale, high quality look and feel. But the personalization and the joy and the excitement is all still in there. There's ambient lighting everywhere, and it's in very thoughtful, unique places that you won't find in other cars. And like I said, the customization for different seat colors, different materials, the exterior colors, all of the decals. Mini Cooper was known for having like over a million variations in how you would build any given Mini Cooper. Whether it was having the Union Jack flag in different colors, on the mirrors, on the roof, the bonnet stripes in different colors, like four different colors. Roof colors, there was like a goldish silver, there's black, there's white, and there's body colored. They even had a rainbow galaxy color, so it was like different shades of blue to green on the roof, and it was all custom painted. So And then, they had different badges, different colors of the grills, different wheels. Like each wheel had four different colors. And Mini still is going to offer that level of customization. And I think that's really what makes Mini Mini, not just the size. They are still very small for the United States. And I think the fact that they do so well, or as well as they do here in the States, I think that speaks to something. And one of those things it speaks to is maintaining its fan base and its general audience. In Europe and in other countries, I'm sure it fits in perfectly. Nobody looks at it and says anything differently. Here in the States, it's so small, but it sells well enough that you would you're going to be hard pressed to find any other subcompact car anymore. But the Countryman is that vehicle that allows people to get the right size vehicle for them here in the States and get into something that's a little bit luxurious, very fun and different from all the other automakers out there, and maintain a value, maintain its quality, and get them into that Mini name and that Mini family. For Europeans, the Countryman probably is their jump into an SUV. And I think it's beautiful and cool, however you look at it. I would definitely check out the Mini Cooper, the Countryman when it comes out. I would highly recommend it. I've driven all the other ones. They are a blast to drive. Some of them got a little chunky and a little slow, and that you really had to get into the JCW or the EV version to really get some thrills out of it. But if you wanted that serious go-kart type feel, you're better off just getting a Fiat 500 Abarth or the three-door Mini Cooper, or even the Clubman. The Clubman was a blast to whip around corners if you really pushed it, especially with the JCW. So that's all I got for today. I really appreciate you guys tuning in. I had to get that little bit of a factoid out there about EVs. Definitely go check one out if you're in the market, because right now the incentives are high and I think they're only going to get better. I can also say that Wranglers and Gladiators have high incentives on them too. So if you're in the market for one of those or you always wanted one, now would be the time to go get one, especially if it's a 2023 model. Because the 2024 models are out, and with the Wrangler, the Gladiators are coming out very soon if they haven't hit the lots already, and those probably won't have as high of an incentive. Grand Cherokees actually have pretty high incentives right now as well. Phenomenal car. I have one. It's my father's, but he left it here in Michigan, so I get to drive that around every now and again. Super comfortable, very quiet, very safe, and it's still a Jeep, so. Check one of those out if you're in the market for one of those as well. The 4xEs came down in price too, and there's a better incentive on those. So now would be the time if you want to jump on an EV and see what they're all about, or even just go test drive one. Would definitely recommend it. And like I said, that's all for today. I appreciate you guys tuning in, and I will be back to you guys hopefully next week with some interesting updates about a historic car brand that's coming back from the dead. Very, very soon. I got to get permission to talk about it, but stay tuned because I think you guys are really going to enjoy hearing about that here on Sketchbook Audio. And before I go, be good to one another and get your sketchbooks out and sketch, sketch, sketch. I, for one, will tell you I am guilty of not sketching as much as I should be. Just being stuck in this hotel right now is kind of depressing, and there's not a lot of space for me to sketch. So I need to follow my own advice and start sketching. Anyways, I will talk to you guys next week here on Sketchbook Audio.